Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Rush, and this is Crime Talk, the most fact-driven, unbiased, true crime channel. Well, today we are coming to you on the road from Cabo San Lucas, Mexico. So let's get straight to the docket. First, a Summer Wells update. Second, a Murdoch case update. Do it yourself and save doesn't always work out very well. Did Mark Means breach attorney-client privilege? And then finally, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk. Thanks for watching. As you can see, we are on the road again. I know it seems like we've been on the road a lot lately, but hey, the world is opening back up again, except here in Cabo, where everything shuts down by 10 p.m. and everybody is still wearing masks, unless, of course, you are in a beautiful home rented here on the beach. Now, you may ask, Scott, why are you there in Cabo San Lucas? Well, we are here for a friend, a birthday celebration. Just me and nine other guys celebrating a friend. That's right. And it got off to a pretty irresponsible start, but we were making good time. So here we are. Let's get to the docket. And first, I hope everyone enjoyed our interview with Pretty Lies and Alibis host. I thought she was great, Gigi. Hopefully enjoy it. Give her a listen. They're really great. And I'm telling you, they have sent me some information. And I thought, I can't run with this. How did they know this? And guess what? They've been right. So hats off to them. All right. First on the docket, an update on the Summer Wells case. Now, the father of Summer Wells, the five-year-old Tennessee girl who vanished from her family's home in June, well, apparently his three sons have been removed from the house by Child Protective Services. The father said it's probably better for them because false theories and speculation about what happened to the girl has driven him to drink. That's right. Donald Wells confirmed the removal of the boys during an interview with a podcast. Apparently the authorities or Child Protective Service came to him and said that they had inside scoop with the Tennessee Bureau of Investigation that they knew he sold his daughter for drugs, and he apparently flipped out. And Wells told this podcaster, I believed that stuff like an idiot. I believed it, and I flipped out. Started drinking and everything else, and that's why they took our kids. Now, there's been a history with the family with social services involvement in this particular case, and everyone, I think, is presumed to be a person of interest, but nobody has come out and said that the father is in fact a suspect. The theory about he's selling Summer for drugs, that has not been made public, and it could have been an interrogation technique. But either way, it made the dad drinking. Social services said, let's get him, the kids out of there for their own protection. And guess what? Now social services can talk to these children without having the father there. And so if the children know something, bam, beautiful interrogation technique and method. It apparently worked. No word, no suspects, no arrests yet in the Summer Wells case, but we will continue to bring you those updates. All right, next on the docket, a Murdoch case update. Now, a lot of people know both Maggie and Paul Murdoch were killed back in early June at the house. No suspects have been identified. No arrests have been made whatsoever. Because of the death of Paul Murdoch, more information is becoming available regarding the boating accident, which really kind of brought the Murdoch family into the public limelight. And on the night of the boat accident, the early morning hours of February 24th of 2019, Murdoch's father, Alex, who is a volunteer prosecutor down there at the 14th Circuit Solicitor's Office, and his grandfather, Randolph, the former solicitor, apparently burst into Murdoch's room in Beaufort Memorial Hospital, and they forbade police from obtaining any statements from the 20-year-old, and this is according to several witness interviews. Now, this was because the South Carolina Department of Natural Resources were trying to figure out who was driving the boat. Was it Paul Murdoch or Connor Cook? Additionally, several hospital workers noted that Alex Murdoch, the boat's owner, the one that could have civil liability, attempted to intercept other boat passengers before officers could interview them. Once again, is this interfering with an investigation, or is this actually being a good attorney? Now, I'd have to say it's not being a bad attorney, and here's why. You have to remember, the Murdochs were prosecutors. What happens in most officer-involved shootings, right? First, the officer, nobody gets to talk to them. The attorneys get to interview everybody before the internal affairs people you normally get to investigate them and ask them questions. And so it gives time for everybody to get their stories straight. Sounds similar? I think sounds very similar in this circumstance, does it not? Some people will say that that's the privilege of the Murdochs down there in Beaufort County. Others are gonna say, well, that was just good lawyering. Still, Paul Murdoch was charged with the vehicular boating assault, but the reality of it is he probably would have had more evidence against him had the police been allowed to investigate. So once again, we'll continue to follow that story. I think this is going to be a huge story, particularly when it involves the death of Maggie and Paul Murdoch. This is a case that is going to go huge. And I know the South Carolina Law Enforcement Division, also known as SLED, is working very diligently on this. And if anybody has any information, they can contact them. But I think there's a deep history of influence and power down there that may be coming to an end. And it's all because of these particular homicides. Wait and see. Next on the docket, do it yourself and save doesn't always work out very well. All right. When I was a young kid, I worked at a full serve gas station. And you know, I was a guy that ran out, pumped the gas, checked the tires, sold you a quart of oil if it's a car needed it. But more often than not, people would have their cars towed into the mechanics because they thought they could do it themselves and save. And they usually wound up taking more time, and it cost more money to have the mechanic come and actually fix the car correctly after they screwed it up. Well, that is the case of this guy. Yes, remember Ronnie O'Neill? He's the man who made headlines when he chose to represent himself at trial and repeatedly used the opportunity to yell at the jurors, question his own 11-year-old son about the night that he stabbed him. I say that because he's been convicted of that. Oh, and then ultimately confessed to the 2018 murder of his girlfriend during closing arguments. That's right. Not a good situation. Do it yourself and save. Now, everyone has a right to an attorney when you're in custody. Even if you, let's say, are a billionaire, but you're in custody and you don't bond out, you get a free attorney. I'm telling you, that free attorney is probably going to be a hell of a lot better than you could ever do as yourself. Now you'll always hear of the one guy who beat the traffic ticket on his own and he's empowered and anybody can be a lawyer. It's not that easy. And Mr. O'Neill was ultimately sentenced to life plus 60 years in prison the other day. So O'Neill was convicted of beating and killing his girlfriend and then used a hatchet to slaughter Ron Nevea, who was autistic and nonverbal before setting fire to the home. So this is just a real great guy. And then his final act of manipulation was to go there and represent himself. Well, the judge wasn't pleased and basically said, I have to give you 3 consecutive life sentences plus 60 years, and that's still not enough. So Mr. O'Neill made quite an impression with the judge indeed. And understand, due process can require the prosecution having to prove their case even when the case is absolutely overwhelming. But you can do it respectfully, and an attorney has to do it ethically as well. All right, before we get to the question of Mark Means and whether he violated attorney-client privilege, let's take a quick recess.
Please Go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up for a background subscription service. You'll be happy you did. If there's anyone out there you were ever curious about what was in their background, now is the time to do it. If you're going to get involved with somebody, now is the time to do it. When you go to crimetalksearch.com, you put in the name, literally millions of public records are searched, and a report is generated. And it's going to give you a report. If they have multiple social media accounts, you're going to find it. If they have multiple phone numbers, multiple email addresses, it's going to be found. And more importantly, you're going to get information regarding criminal history. Hopefully the person you're searching has none whatsoever. But if it's there, it's going to be found. You're going to get everything you'd want to know, whether you're going into business or whether you're going into a personal relationship. You're going to be able to find out the information you want to know. So go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up today. You'll be happy you did.
All right. And we're back. Now, oftentimes I am very hesitant to get into speculation. One of the reasons that we here at Crime Talk try to stick to the facts and then give the legal analysis is because as an attorney, it's my job to tell you the truth. My job is not to speculate. Now, there's a lot of attorneys out there that'll tell you whatever you want to hear, but it's not going to change the final outcome. Just like there's a lot of YouTubers out there that will let you speculate all day long, but it's not based in any fact or necessarily reason in the end when it comes to the law. But I got this email the other day from a subscriber, and I thought it was rather interesting. Now, I went and tried to find this, but the question was, can you please explain what could happen in this situation? Allegedly, Mark Means released a recorded phone call to a YouTuber, and this other YouTuber posted a live stream saying it was all true that Mark Means was communicating with this individual. The YouTuber and provided her with this recording. Can this hurt the case? Would love to hear your thoughts. All right. So this is a question that we'll try to answer. All right. When an attorney is representing a client, there's a thing called attorney-client privilege. And the attorney-client privilege remains. So hypothetically, if somebody said, hey, I did terrible things, these are where the bodies are buried, an attorney cannot reveal that information to anyone. Even if the client dies, that communication rests with the attorney. Now you may say, why? The family needs to know. Now, the reason why you have the attorney-client communication privilege is that you want to be able to be completely truthful and candid with your attorney so that you can receive the best legal advice and opinion based upon those set of circumstances. It's very similar to the doctor-patient privilege. The doctor wants to know all the details, and if you feel as though what you're going to tell them may be released to other people, it could be embarrassing, it could harm or damage relationships, then you may not be completely candid. But if you believe that that information is forever with the attorney, or the doctor in this example, then you're hopefully going to be candid so you can receive the best advice, whether medical or legal. And in this particular case, the attorney cannot release information about the case. Now, if somebody says, hey, do you represent this particular individual? Yes, I do. Okay. And some people make an argument, well, if it's public information, you should still be able to talk about it. Then the question is, has the client given you permission? That's where it gets very tricky. An attorney, and this is my humble opinion, when I have a case, I try not to talk to the press if they call. And sometimes I'll call to say, what are you gonna run? And 99% of the time it's going to be no comment, all right? Bottom line, first, because yes, a client, anything they say can be used against them, but also, if you have a representative and you are holding that statement out to them, that could be potentially imputed to the client. So you have to always be careful for that. Second, you don't ever want to release attorney-client information. If you do and it damages the case, guess what? The attorney's probably going to need to contact their malpractice carrier. Why? Because you could get sued. Two, they could get grieved. So that's why you don't talk to the people. That's why you don't release information about a case unless you have written permission to do that. Oftentimes, if I have a client that comes in and their parents accompany them and the parent's going to pay the bill, I have to turn to the parents and say, I understand and appreciate that you are paying the bill, but little Johnny is the client. And you've probably told, or he's probably, little Johnny's probably told the parents everything at this point, but maybe he hasn't. So I tell them, if he comes to me and says, hey, don't tell this to mom and dad, I can't tell you. And if little Johnny says, it's okay to tell my mom and dad anything about this case, guess what? I have them write it out and sign it and date it. And unless and until I get some sort of revocation of that permission to do so, I'll be able to do so. But if the client revokes it, and I've had clients revoke it, say, don't tell mom or dad, or don't tell this person anything else, then it's all over. Same thing, the same analysis applies to documents. You cannot release documents. And I'm not saying Mr. Means has, because frankly, that website that I was sent to a link, I'm not sure I would trust anything about that particular person. Is this somebody trying to get their 15 minutes of fame? I don't know. But you know, there's so much garbage out there. There really is. But from the attorney standpoint, you shouldn't be releasing documents. Yes, you can talk in the generalities about a case. Like, oh, I had a case once that did this. Once I had a case that did this. But you can't be given so much information that people could figure out, so to speak, what the client actually said to you. And then it gets a really fine line, is what's actually public, what was in the public domain, what's not. But the best point and the best plan of attack for any attorney on a high profile case is do not talk to the press. You say no comment, we will try this case in court, not in the court of public opinion. Because frankly, the court of public opinion really doesn't matter at the end of the day if you're criminally charged. So hopefully that answers the question. Attorneys shouldn't be giving, in my humble opinion, interviews. They certainly shouldn't be releasing documents of any kind about a case unless there is an absolute written permission from the client authorizing them to do so. Otherwise, it could be an unauthorized breach of attorney-client privilege. Not good indeed. Not good indeed. Now, I've said this before, you know, Mark Means, hey, everyone's entitled to the attorney of their choice. If they choose to hire an attorney who's never handled a felony case, let alone a multiple homicide case, that's their choice to do so. But the defendant shouldn't be allowed to reap a benefit from it in the end if they are in fact ineffective. Bottom line, Lori Vallow, whether people like her or not, it is in her best interest and the public's best interest that she receive effective legal representation so we do not wind up doing this case again. All right, next on the docket, couple of things. We didn't do the dumb criminal contestant because, well, we weren't available. Why weren't we available? Well, let me show you why. It is a picture of us out fishing off the coast of Cabo San Lucas, deep sea fishing. Now, we got a couple of bites, but we didn't catch anything rather disappointing. And also, check out this house that we have. It is kind of surrounded. The one side has a big hotel resort, but they can't bother us and we don't bother them. So, and then the video, I tried out my drone that I haven't used in years. I got it to fly, but look at this house. It has like the main house, the pool, and then a stack of rooms that go up the hill, probably for, I think we've got 8 rooms here on this particular property, private beach, chef, concierge that is here, and it's a private house. Absolutely amazing. Highly recommend Cabo. Although this time of year, probably why the house was available, because damn, it's hot. I usually try to travel locations when it's cold everywhere else and not hotter than where you're going for sure. Wow, is it hot. Next on the docket, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Now, before we do that, let's announce the winner. The winner is, by overwhelming vote, Judith Black. If you remember her, Ms. Black went to her local Burger King and she's basically like, hey, it's Burger King. I can have it my way. But she was not satisfied with the slice of her tomato. She took the sandwich back, used some racial epithets, threw the sandwich at the Burger King employee. You can't do that. Inappropriate. All right. Our dumb criminal contestant of the day. We actually have two of them. All right. Our two dumb criminal contestants of the day today, well, that's because we didn't have one yesterday, is an unidentified Florida man who thought that he was so cool and so tough that he took his gun to a bar in Florida. And he went to the O'Reilly's Uptown Tavern in Pensacola about 11 p.m. last Thursday night, pulled the gun out to show it to a man and the woman at the bar, because, you know, at least where I come from, you can't have firearms in places where people will be drinking and becoming intoxicated. Huh, I wonder why they have that law. Oh, that's right, because of dumb idiots like this. Well, the man apparently tried to put the gun into his imaginary holster under his shoulder. That's right, when the gun went off, striking him in the torso. So unidentified Florida man, you are our dumb criminal contestant of the day, number one. And our second dumb criminal contestant today, please meet Miss Haven Shank. That's right. The inmates in the Missouri Correctional Facility. That's right. They shanked her. That's right. Miss Shank was apparently arrested because she was having multiple occasions with a male offender or offenders. I think they ran around saying they shanked her. That's right. Well, she's in trouble. She's charged. And guess what? Even better yet, she's pregnant. You can't make this stuff up, ladies and gentlemen. So as a correctional officer, she knows she can't have sex with the inmates. And you certainly don't want to get pregnant to have verification that the inmate is the dad. So Ms. Shank, you are our second dumb criminal contestant of the day. Congratulations. All right. Thanks for watching. We're still going to do our live show tonight at 6 p.m. Mountain Time. But until then, I'm going to go get back in the pool. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next time on Crime Talk.